Morning. In today's Daven Erevin, Ayin Aleph. We are on Ayin Amud Beis. We are going to be starting about halfway down on the Amud, a little bit less than that. We're in the middle of discussing Bitul HaRishus in the event that there was a failure and somebody did not contribute to the Eruv. So under those circumstances, he can relinquish his rights to the Eruv and thereby allowing everyone else to be able to carry from their homes into the Chatzar. The Mishnah presents itself on some Testament Beis in yesterday's daf, actually 2 days ago. The Mishnah brought down a number of scenarios and where Bitul Rishus is allowed, and under certain circumstances, Bitul Rishus is not allowed. Machlokes between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel in terms of when Bitul Rishus is allowed. And so in the course of yesterday's discussion, yesterday's Gemara, so we really discussed two main topics. One topic we discussed yesterday was when you are doing Bitul Rishus, so do you have to be mevatel lechol echad ve'echad me'anshei chatzer? Is the requirement necessary that you go ahead and relinquish to each of the members of the chatzer, being that you are now going to be relinquishing your rights to every member of the chatzer, so does it require verbalization where you are going to actually articulate to every one of them? That is one discussion that we had in yesterday's Gemara. Rava's position is that you do have to be mevatel lechol echad ve'echad, and despite the fact that Abai challenged Rava, but the Gemara's conclusion, although the Gemara actually is not super conclusive, but the conclusion is that you do need to be mevatel lechol echad ve'echad. Second issue that comes up in yesterday's daf is the father dies on Shabbos and he did not set up an Eruv. He did not contribute to the Eruv before Shabbos. So can his son be mevatel on Shabbos itself? And the question becomes the following: when it comes to the son's inheritance on Shabbos. So by virtue of the fact that he was not in a position where he could have contributed to the Eruv before Shabbos, it wasn't his home before Shabbos. So as a function of the fact that he couldn't contribute to the Eruv before Shabbos, therefore, he's going to be prevented from doing Bitul on Shabbos itself. Or the other possibility, the Gemara says, is that really the son is just simply a continuation of the father, an extension of the father. And so whatever rights and abilities the father had going into Shabbos, so the son just simply steps in and inherits those very rights. This is a question the Gemara asked yesterday. The Gemara is right now in the middle of discussing that very question. And so this is what we're going to be picked up where we left off yesterday. Eisve, it's more than halfway down on Ayin Amud Beis. It is about 8-9 lines from the bottom of the Amud. The first words in the line are Bitul Rishus. Eisve, now we're going to have a challenge. Now Eisve means that one Amora is challenging another Amora. So who's involved in this discussion? So it's Rav Nachman. Rava asked the following question from Rav Nachman, meaning it was Rava who posed this question to Rav Nachman, and Rav Nachman's response was very clear. Rav Nachman says that his own opinion is that the son can be mevatel. And now the challenges ensue. In other words, we're going to see whether or not Rav Nachman's position can be defended in light of the brises that we're going to see together. So yesterday we saw one brisa together. The Gemara ended up defending Rav Nachman from that brisa. We have two more brises to take a look at. So we are now on Ayin Amud Beis, continuing from yesterday. Eisve, the Gemara challenges. Echem b'mnei chaser shem eisve, nech reshus alechem en ashok. A member of the chaser dies, and he leaves his property over. Echem en ashok, now his son happens to be in the market. That's just an expression. It simply means that the son right now does not have any holdings in this chaser. He doesn't have any other properties in this chaser. So, vis-a-vis the beginning of Shabbos, the son was an outsider. That's what the word shuk over here means. And the dad dies and leaves over the property for his son, who now, for the first time this Shabbos, becomes a resident of this chatzer. So, mi be'od yom oser, mishechashecha eino oser. So, the Braisa says that if the death occurred before Shabbos began, so now the son creates restrictions. However, mishechashecha, if dad dies on Shabbos, eino oser, the son does not create restrictions. Now, the reason why... presumably the son does not create restrictions, is because it was going into Shabbos. It was corrected, meaning that we're assuming that the dad created and contributed to the Eruv prior to Shabbos, and so therefore we have a setup where it was mutter, and as we learned in yesterday's Gemara, as long as it was mutter on the onset of Shabbos, so it remains in that state of heter for the balance of that Shabbos. Now, Bryce over here discusses another scenario where it's Echem and Ashuk Shemes. In other words, dad was not a resident of this Chatzer, and he dies and he leaves over his property Le'echem b'mnei Chatzer. And he leaves his property over to one of the members of the Chatzer, meaning his son already is a resident of this Chatzer. And so now he is going to be owning two homes. So Miba Yom Ein Oser, Mishach HaShech Oser. Now, if the death occurred Miba O Yom, so if the death occurred before the before Shabbos, so then there, no Iser is created. No Iser is created because the son already made a contribution towards this Eruv. And so by virtue of the fact that he just simply has another property, but okay, but he's a contributor. However, Mishach HaShech, however, if it happened after Shabbos occurred, so the Oser, so then it creates a prohibition, then it creates restrictions. Okay, so now the obvious problem over here in this brisa is that if dad dies on Shabbos itself, and therefore the son now inherits the property in this chatzer, and nobody made an eruv, nobody contributed for the eruv from this property, so now what we have is a situation of iser, and why can't the son just simply do bittul? And this is obviously a question posed against Rav Nachman. So amai oser nivatel. So the Gemara says, so why is this created? In other words, let the son just simply do bittul. And according to Rav Nachman, if the son is just simply stepping in for the father, so the father has certainly had the ability to do bittul over the course of Shabbos, so why can't the son do that as well? So the Gemara's response is, my oser nami diktani achi yivatel. So the Gemara's response, very simple, and that is that what the Bryce is telling us is that right now, as currently constructed, so there is it's iser, meaning it's restricted. Because dad died, dad did not contribute towards the Eruv. The son inherited on Shabbos. It's too late for the son to contribute to the Eruv. So under these circumstances, so now restriction has been created. And the only way now to solve the problem is Bittul. But Bittul is an option. Until the son does Bittul, so then we're going to be in a state of restriction. Ad kan that takes us to the end of that brisa, and the Gemara so far has defended Rav Nachman. We continue. When the very bottom of Einam and Beis Tashma, Yisrael v'ger, Shurim b'megura achas, u'meitzger mi ba'od yom. So you have a Jew and a convert living b'megura achas. Megura, Rashi describes it over here as a garden, as a granary. But anyway, but the point is that it's got many rooms and it's got shared area. Okay, and it requires an eruv in order to be able to carry in this area. Now, interesting over here that we're not going to be discussing inheritance as much as we're going to be just simply discussing the acquisition of the property of a ger. The Gemara is going to see it as basically being the same issue. In other words, when you acquire the property of a ger, you are like a yoresh. Understood. It's not exactly the same, but that's the way the Gemara is going to view it. Otherwise, it's difficult to understand what the question is, meaning because if they're not the same, so then we're having two different discussions. So let's assume, for the purposes of understanding the Gemara, that the acquisition of the property of the ger is tantamount to Yerusha. As we've gone over numerous times throughout Shas, when a convert dies and he himself did not have any children post-gerus, so that means halachically he has no family. And since halachically he has no family, so the first one now who goes ahead and makes claim to this property, so he's now going to be the de facto owner of this property. So I have a Yisrael v'ger that are living in this Megura, umeisker mi ba'od yom, and the convert dies before Shabbos. So afa pishechzik Yisrael acher b'nechasav. So now what I have is I have another Jew who creates acquisition on this property. So even though you have somebody, another Jew doing so, oser, so creates iser. Mishech hashecha, however, if let's say the death of the ger occurred on Shabbos itself, afa pishechzik Yisrael acher, even if nobody else, no other Jew, did an acquisition on this property, eino oser. So then it does not create restriction. Now the brisa, as we have just read it, is really difficult to grasp and comprehend. And the Gemara immediately tries to gain understanding of the brisa. What is the brisa talking about? Agufa kasha. I don't understand, says the Gemara. Amar mi bad yom afa bishe hichzik. If the ger died before Shabbos, and you're telling me even if somebody acquired velomi by kilo ichzik, and it goes without saying if somebody did not acquire adrabi kilo ichzik lo aser, so the Gemara says I don't understand. You now have a property in the chatzer, and nobody's making an acquisition, and it doesn't create iser. So the Gemara says Amar Papa ema afa pi shelo ichzik. So the Rav Papa says okay, so we're going to have to amend the brisa, and the way the the way the brisa is to be read is that even though nobody acquired v'ha'afa pi shehechzik ketani, yeah, the Gemara says, but that's not what the brisa says. So hachi kamar, so the Gemara says, okay, this is the intent of the brisa. Afa pi shelo hechzik min b'yom elam shechashecha. So the way to understand the brisa is that even though the acquisition was not occurred during the day and it was only acquired at night, kevin de havalei lahachzik min b'od yom oser. Since there was a possibility, a potential of somebody acquiring it before Shabbos, so therefore it creates iser. And the way Rashi understands this over here is that basically the idea is as follows. When you have a ger dying, he leaves the property over, and this occurred before Shabbos, so at this point in time, it's available. And then it's not just, I mean, I was going to say potentially available. It is potentially available, but it's a strong potential, meaning all anybody has to do at this point in time is just simply assume ownership of the property. There doesn't have to be a purchase. There doesn't have to be a kinyan. I mean, there has to be a chazaka, but there's nobody on the other side of that transaction. So by virtue of the fact that this is so easy to acquire, the halacha views it as if this is an owned property even before Shabbos. As such, it's an owned property before Shabbos, and the owner of that property did not contribute to the Eruv. Okay, that's going to create restriction. However, Mishecha Shecha, but let's say the death of the ger occurred at night. Even though no other Jew acquired it, so it does not create Isser. So the Gemara says, wait a second, this also needs clarification. The Gemara says, I don't understand. If somebody acquires the property on Shabbos, so that should for sure should create restriction. Now, the Gemara is glossing over the fact, how is somebody acquiring this property on Shabbos itself? Okay, the Gemara doesn't really address it, but certainly it bears a thought. It demands at least some sort of attention in that somebody's acquiring a property on Shabbos itself. You're not allowed to, generally speaking, you're not allowed to make acquisitions on Shabbos itself. But be that as it may, I'm sorry, I don't have a response, but be that as it may, so the Gemara, again, looks to clarify. Amar Papa Ema Afa Pisha Hechzik. So the Gemara says that even though somebody acquired it, meaning the correct understanding of the second half of the Braisa is that the ger dies on Shabbos, and even if somebody, this is the way to understand the Braisa, even if somebody else now were to acquire that property, it doesn't create restriction. So the Gemara says, Va'afa pisha lo hichzik katani. Yeah, the Gemara says, yeah, but the Braisa doesn't say that. Hachikamer, the Gemara says, yeah, but this is how we're going to understand the Braisa. Afa pisha hichzik mishich hashecha, kevin de lo havale lahachzik mebo yomein oser. Yeah, but over here there's no potential. Meaning going, he died on Shabbos. He didn't die before Shabbos. So that means to say that going into Shabbos, so the issue of Erev was resolved going into Shabbos. And so therefore, if the problem only, if that resolution is unresolved on Shabbos itself, that's not a problem, as we already established. Meaning once you go into a chatzer and it is corrected going into Shabbos, so then it remains that way for the rest of Shabbos, even if something were to change on Shabbos itself. Okay, that kind of takes us to now, just simply all we did at this point in time is quote the Braisa, and we have now better understanding of the Braisa. What comes out from all this is as follows, Katani Mi Aresha. We're now going to go back to the beginning of the Braisa as now we understand it. And again, just quickly to recap, the beginning of the Braisa is dealing with a scenario where he died before Shabbos, and now this property becomes available, so available that even if somebody acquires it on Shabbos, we view it as if he really becomes an acquirer of it before Shabbos, and he didn't make a contribution, Oser. It nevertheless now is going to create a restriction because he didn't contribute to the Eruv, and he owned it before Shabbos. So am I Oser Nivatel? So the Gemara says, now that we're here, so now we get to ask a pretty straightforward question, and that is, why does it create Oser? Why not just simply do Bittul? And Bittul now would allow for acquisition. So I take that back. Bittul would now allow for carrying. And why don't we just simply say that the one who assumes ownership of this property, so albeit he didn't contribute to the Eruv, but at least let him do Bittul, let him relinquish that property or his rights to the Chatzir. So my osa diktani achi vatel, and again the Gemara's deflection over here, same deflection that we saw just moments earlier, and that is bittul over here just simply means, I'm sorry, iser over here means until he does bittul. But in other words, but he does in fact have the right to do bittul. Okay, and again I just want to reiterate that over here in this brisa, so we're not discussing Yerusha in the classic sense. It's not a father-son acquisition or inheritance, but rather it is somebody acquiring the property of the ger. But it's clear that the Gemara treats the two on par with one another. Okay. What we have now is two attacks on Rav Nachman this morning, one from one Braisa, one from another Braisa, aside from the fact that Gemara yesterday also brought in a third Braisa that also seems to go against Rav Nachman. In each one of the cases, what the Gemara does is it defends Rav Nachman's position by interpreting the Braisa, and it's not such a difficult interpretation. It's just the Braisa in both of these cases that we did this morning just simply means that Isser is created until the point of Bittul. Fine. Rav Yochanan Amar Masis and Mani Beit Shammai Amar Ein Bitul Rishus B'Shabbes. Did not Meim Asai Nosim Rishus Beit Shammai Omrim Mibod Yom Beis Omrim Mishetachshach. Rav Yochanan gives an extraordinarily simple, straightforward answer to the two attacks on Rav Nachman from the two brises that we just learned. And Rav Yochanan says, look, these two attacks on Rav Nachman aren't valid because these two brises, we don't know who the author of these brises are. They are anonymous brises, and one could just simply argue that the authors of these two brises is the Shita of Beit Shammai. Now, as the Gemara just quoted, and we learned in yesterday's daf, according to Shita's Beit Shammai, Bittul can only be done before Shabbos, Bittul cannot be done on Shabbos itself. And so, obviously, in both of these brises, we're talking about where his first opportunity to do Bittul was on Shabbos. The brisa does not give that as an avenue. So, very well, very simply, it could be that the author of the brisa is, in fact, Shita's Beit Shammai. And Bittul, therefore, no longer becomes an option. Okay. Amar Ula. We are continuing the Gemara. We're halfway down in Ayin Aleph Amud Aleph. And we start off now in the Gemara with a really straightforward question. We're finishing up from the Mishnah yesterday, and that is, when can Bittul be done? So, as we learned in yesterday's daf, Machlokes Beit Shammai and Beis Hillel. Beis Hillel is of the position that Bittul can be done even on Shabbos itself, and Beis Shammai says, no, Bittul can only be done before Shabbos. Now, if we're going to just spend a moment thinking, analyzing these two positions, so Beis Shammai seems to be mistaber, seems to be a reasonable position. Because what is Bittul? Bittul is in the absence of an Eruv. Meaning that you should have contributed to the Eruv prior to Shabbos. And truth be told is that you can only contribute to the Eruv prior to Shabbos. The setting up of the Eruv can only be done before Shabbos. So in the absence of not setting up an Eruv, so now we have Bittul Rishus. You're going to just simply relinquish your rights. So Beit Shammai will tell you, good, you can only relinquish your rights at a time when there was at least an option to contribute to the Eruv. That's Shitas Beit Shammai. And meanwhile, Beis Hillel says, no, you can do Bittul even on Shabbos itself. So what's the basis of that shita of Beis Hillel? That's the Gemara's question. The Gemara's going to give two answers to this question. So the Gemara says, Amar Ula, my time of the Beis Hillel, Nasikam, or Klachit Tzol Yafos. So Ula asks and answers the question, what's the rationale behind Beis Hillel? And so his answer is, it is similar to the Gemara in Bava Metzia about Klachit Tzol Yafos. What's the Gemara in Bava Metzia? So Rashi over here says it, and I'm going to just simply say the Rashi outside. You have a situation where I go into someone else's property and I am Toreim, and I set aside the Trumas HaMaisos for that individual. I wasn't given authorization. I'm not acting as his agent. This is not a case of Shlichus, but rather I do it on my own. Now, Toreim Shlomidas, if I take off Truma without the consent of the owner, so generally speaking, of course, it's no good. In other words, it only is going to work if I'm acting as a Shlich. But as if I'm not acting as a Shlich, it doesn't work. So now, let's say the Gemara Bava Metzia deals with the following scenario. So as I am finishing up taking off Trumas HaMaisos on someone else's property, so the owner comes in and he makes a comment. And he says, it's so interesting. You're on my property, you're taking off Trumas HaMaisos for me, and I didn't authorize you to do so. Interesting. Now, if he says, Klachetel Yafos, why didn't you go to the better produce and assign the truma from the better produce and assign the maisa from the better produce, and that's the expression, Klachetel Yafos. Now, if he actually had better produce, so actually what he meant was, I'm happy you did it, but you should have gone over there. So then we understand that he is actually affirming and confirming what I did. If, on the other hand, he doesn't have any better produce, so what his statement was is just dripping sarcasm. And basically what he's saying is, what are you doing? Okay, good. That's Klachet Tzol Yafos. And so what the Gemara's understanding over here is that maybe over here, when a person is being Mevat Roshos, so the truth of the matter is that what he is indicating to everybody is that I would have liked to have contributed to the Erev, and I would have liked to have been in a situation of Heter. It just happens to be that for whatever reason, before Shabbos, I didn't do it. I was too busy, whatever the case is. So maybe the reason why Beis Hillel says it can be done on Shabbos is that it's similar to the case of Klachet Tzol Yafos, where basically it is an approval, albeit it's slightly late in the game, meaning it's on Shabbos itself, but it's an approval of an action that really brings us back to even before Shabbos. That is Ula's explanation of Beis Hillel. Amar Abaye, so continuing in the Gemara, Meis Nachri B'Shabbos, my Klachet Tzol Yafos Ika. So the Gemara says, wait one second. We know that Bittul works in scenarios in which we don't have this explanation of Klach Chetzi Yafas. Let's say a non-Jew lived in the Chatzer and he died on Shabbos, and he refused to rent out his property before Shabbos, and he dies on Shabbos. So under those circumstances, we could do Bittul. Now over there, that's not a case of Klach Chetzi Yafas, meaning over there, nobody had the possibility, the potential of being Ma'ariv going into Shabbos. And even in that case, Beis Hillel is of the position that Bittul can be done on Shabbos itself. So the Gemara says, okay, so we have to give a different explanation behind Beis Hillel. Gemara's explanation is that the machlokes between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel is extraordinarily lumdush. And that is how to see the act of Bittul. Is the act of Bittul a real transaction? Is it a formal transaction? Beis Shammai says, yeah, that's the way to look at it. As a formal transaction, we know that transactions cannot be done on Shabbos. It's Mekach u'Memkar. Rashi describes that according to Beis Shammai, it's dummy leMekach u'Memkar. It's similar, it's analogous to commerce. And you're not allowed to do commercial activity on Shabbos. Now, why are you not allowed to do commercial activity on Shabbos? So what we could suggest is one of a couple of reasons. Number one, the Pasuk Yishayahu. So, Mimso Chefzecha, V'daber Davar. So one reason has to do with the fact that it's the Navi tells us that on Shabbos we have to disengage from commercial activity. And on top of that also, there's a Rashi. I think the Rashi's in Beitza. But there's a Rashi that says that once you're involved in commercial activity and businesses and transactions, so you're going to be very tempted to write it down. You're going to want to write down transactions. So that is a second explanation in terms of why it's prohibited as Igzera, because Shema Yechtov that you may end up writing. Whatever the case is, Beis Shammai views Bittul HaRishus as a formal transaction where you are formally withdrawing yourself from the rights of your property, and that's why it simply doesn't work. That's Beis Shammai. On the other hand, Beis Hillel says, no, it's not formal, it's informal. In other words, istiluke reshusa b'Shabbos. You're just simply removing yourself, but it's not a formal transaction. And so therefore, since it's more informal, so that's why it can be done even on Shabbos itself. Okay, that kind of takes us now to the end of that Mishnah, the end of that Sugya. We continue. We're on Ein Alpha and Aleph, and we're continuing in the Gemara. We're going to start the next Mishnah. Mishnah starts off, Balabaisha Yashutov Lashchein of Lezebiyayin or Lezebiyayin. So, a person has a business partnership with his neighbors. One set of neighbors it's with wine, and with another set of neighbors it's also with wine. So, Eina Tzrichem Le'arev. So now there's no requirement of an Eruv. Okay? So, really interesting Mishnah that we started, and that is that there can be a substitution for an Eruv. Now, the Eruv classically is somebody comes around and collects. Now, if it's an Eruv of a Chatzer, so it has to be bread. If it's an Eruv of a Mavui, sheet of Mavui, so it could be basically any food, except for water and salt and mushrooms. And over here, by virtue of the fact that, number one, we're talking about wine and oil, and number two, the Mishnah uses the word shutaf. That's not good evidence. But the oil and the wine is really good evidence that we're not talking about Eruv Echatzeres, because that has to be with bread. Actually, we haven't established that yet in the Gemara, even though I say it as if this is a known piece of information. It happens to come up in tomorrow's daf. Anyway, but we're talking about oil and we're talking about wine, so we're talking about Sheet of Mavos. Okay, but anyway, so you have basically a group here that has a partnership with another chatzer that's contiguous and sharing the same mavui, and you have a partnership also with another chatzer that's also contiguous and sharing the same shituf. And so what we're learning here in this Mishnah is that business partnerships can take the place of an Eruv, which is really an interesting idea. Meaning, because if you think about it, right, it's Mesaber. The idea of an Eruv is that what it does is it unifies. It now takes people that are disconnected, and it creates connection by virtue of the fact that we have a partnership now. So now what we've done is we've already established a connection through the partnership, through the business partnership. As such now, so it basically takes the place of an Eruv. And so with that stated, so now let's go back to the Mishnah. Let's start the Mishnah from the beginning. So he has now a business partnership with his neighbors. Now it happens to be that he has two partnerships, and both of them are with wine. And now there's no requirement of an Eruv. However, if one partnership is with one group is with wine, and another partnership with another group is with oil, so then Srichim La'arev. So that does not create unification, and that doesn't substitute for the Eruv. There's now still an Eruv that is going to need to be set up. Rabbi Shimon Omer, Rabbi Shimon says it doesn't matter what the vehicle of the partnership is over. Even under those circumstances, there is no requirement to make an Eruv. Now, a couple of things that need to be explained further in the Mishnah. We're going to jump right into the Gemara. Amarav of the Kli Echad. So Rav says that the only way that this partnership will substitute for an Eruv is only if the wine is in one Keli. So Uva Kli Echad, Amarav Dekanamik Tani. Rav says, look, I'm going to go back to the Mishnah. And when you critically read the Mishnah, you'll see that Rav is absolutely right. So because the Mishnah makes a distinction between having partnerships over wine versus having a partnership, one partnership with wine and another one with oil. So the Gemara says, good. Now it makes perfect sense if we're talking about two kalim. Now I understand the difference between wine and wine versus wine and oil. Wine and wine is in one keli, wine and oil in two kelim. So if, however, in both cases that we're talking about where the partnerships were created in two different barrels, so then what difference does it make what's in one barrel and what's in the other barrel? So Amalei Abaye, Abaye says, that argument doesn't convince me. Because yayin v'yayin roi la'ariv, yayin v'shemen ain roi la'ariv. Look, it might be in two different barrels, but if it's wine in both business partnerships, so at least now we could take the wine and we could put it in one barrel. At least it has the potential to go into one barrel. However, if it's wine and oil you would never mix together in one barrel. So Abaye says, I may not disagree with your point, but the way you're extracting it from the Mishnah, Abaye says, to that I object. Okay, so basically what we learned together is that if I have a partnership between the members of various chatzers that are adjoining one another, so as long as the partnerships are created over the same commodity, so then that partnership is going to take the place, it will replace the need for an Eruv. And Rav just taught us that it has to be B'Kli Echad, that all the oil has to be in one Keli. Now Rashi over here points out that we learned earlier in the Masechta, back on Daf Mem Tes, that when collecting the Eruv, it could actually be collected in multiple Kelim. So, but Rashi makes the obvious distinction. Back then we were talking about where everyone was contributing an actual Eruv. Here our discussion is using a business partnership in lieu of an Eruv. So Rashi says it's different over here, and that's why, according to Rav, it has to be B'Kli Echad. Now, we just learned together that a business partnership over the same commodity will now unify everybody together and will obviate the need to set up an additional Eruv. And again, I'm using the word Eruv loosely over here, more technically sheet of mavos, but it's the same idea. It now unifies everybody so that now everybody can carry from the chatzer into the mavoi. Now Rabbi Shimon Omer Echazev Echazein Tzarchem La'arev. Now Rabbi Shimon says that under both circumstances there is no requirement to make an Eruv, even if the business partnerships, one is predicated on wine and the other one's predicated on oil. Rabbi Shimon says that also obviates the need to set up an Eruv. Rabbi Shimon Omer Echazev Echazein Tzarchem La'arev. The Gemara is just having a hard time understanding that. Meaning the position of the Tanakhama, the Mishnah, seems to make a lot more sense. In that, if we're using the business partnership as a replacement of the Eruv, so isn't the whole idea that it's unifying? And unification comes if it's the same commodity. And Rabbi Shimon says, even if it's different commodities, so that's different businesses, it's different business partnerships, how can that replace the Eruv? So Amirabah Hachem Ma'iskinan. So Rabbi says, well, the case over here under discussion is the following. B'chatzer shebein shnei mevos. We're discussing the following scenario, and that is, I have a chatzer flanked by two different mavois, and Rabbi Shimon Latame did none. And what Rabbi Shimon is saying is something that was consistent to what he said earlier in the Masechta. This takes us way back in the Masechta, not way back, but Daf Mem Hei. Okay, it takes back some time. And you recall, there we were talking about Eruv Yitzchumim, and we talked about a situation where you had three people each one of them only had four amos for Shabbos, and there was overlap between one and two, and there was overlap between two and three. So one and two can eat in a shared area, and two and three can eat shared area, but one and three cannot eat together because they don't share any area. Then, if you recall, Rabbi Shimon in that Mishnah taught us that that's not only true in the scenario of the four people, it's true also in the scenario of three chatzeros. That when I have three chatzeros in a row, each one of them having a separate opening to a Rishus HaRabim. Now, Rabbi Shimon says that if one and two created a combined Erev, so then you can carry from one and two. And in the same scenario where two and three also made a combined Erev, so then what you could do now is you can carry from one to two and two to one, and you can carry from two to three and back from three to two. So Rabbi Shimon takes this principle and extends it to the case of the Chatzer. Now, if you recall over there, the Chachamim objected to that idea because what could we could easily see happen is somebody now carrying from three to two and then subsequently carrying from two back to down to, not back, but from then two to one, and failing to realize that there was no Eruv unifying one and three. Anyway, what the Gemara now is suggesting is that that's the same Rabbi Shimon of our Mishnah over here. This is Rabbah's understanding of Rabbi Shimon of our Mishnah. Rabbah's talking now, setting up our Mishnah in a similar scenario where I have a chatzer and he is flanked on both sides by a mavoi. Thereby, what he's going to do is now he's going to be having to make separate shitof mevo'os. Now, with the other members of one mavoi, let's call it mavoi A, so he has a business partnership with them over wine. And with the other mavoi, mavoi B, he has a business partnership with oil. Perfect. And now what Rabbi Shimon's telling us is that each of those shituf mavos can operate independent one of the other. That's what Rabbi Shimon's saying. Much like the case of the three chatzeros, where you can have one chatzer, the central chatzer, creating one era for one side and a separate era for the other side. This is Rabbi's understanding. It's an incredibly creative and within the sheet of Rabbi Shimon, consistent way of explaining our Mishnah. Now, we're just going to read this quickly because this is just the restatement of the Mishnah that we saw earlier in the Masechta. We learned in the Mishnah, Rabbi Shimon Lama Adav Adomer, what's comparable to L'shal Chatzeros, Apsucha Zulazu, Upsuchos L'Rishos Arabim, three Chatzeros in a row, each one of them opened up to the same street. Erev Ushayim HaChitzonis Imaim Tzayis, He Mutaris Imahem, Ve'Heim Mutaris Ima, Ushayim HaChitzonis Asurim Zuim Zu. Exactly what we just established, the scenario where one can carry to two, and three can carry to two, but one can carry to three. So Amalei Abaye Midami. So Abaye says to Rabbah, it's a creative solution, but it doesn't read so well in our Mishnah. In fact, let's take a look at the wording of our Mishnah. Hasam Ketani Shtayim Chetzion Esasuros. Well, first let's take a look at the language of that Mishnah over there. It says that one and three are prohibited from one another. Hachi Ketani Ein Srichim La'arev Klal. So over here in our Mishnah, it says that there's no requirement of an Erev. It doesn't sound exactly the same. But the Gemara supports Rabbah's answer. My ain't shrichim la'arev, shchein b'hadei balabayis, aval shchein b'hadei adadi, shrichim la'arev. So the Gemara says, well, no. The neighbors with the balabayis don't require an Erev, because again, the business partnership will simply be a substitution for the Erev. But if the two mavos want to create a connection, a unification between the two of them, so now they're going to need an Eruv. Meaning to say, because since the business partnership's over two separate commodities, so the business partnership itself are not going to be able to combine the two mavois. That won't be able to happen. And if the two mavois do in fact want to combine, so it's going to require a separate unification, a separate Eruv. Okay, that's how we could read the Mishnah, and the Gemara now has defended and supported Rabbah's answer. As we now turn to the Amud Beis, the Gemara now is going to give a number of other answers to deal with this question. Again, the question on the table is how to understand Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Shimon says that if the partnership that's created is created with multiple partnerships over different commodities, so Rabbi Shimon says that too is going to be able to create unification. And the question is how? How can it create unification if they are different business ventures? Rav Yosef, Amar Rabbi Shimon, Rabban Mepilta, Rabbi Yochanan, Nori, Rabban Kamifli, Didnan. So the Gemara now is going to be giving our second approach, that of Rav Yosef, and that is that the machlokes between Rabbi Shimon and the Chachamim is really a machlokes between Rav Yochanan Nuri and the Chachamim, a Mishnah. Now the truth of the matter is that we've seen this Mishnah already a couple of times back in Masechta Shabbos, and the Mishnah over here is a Mishnah Tful Yom, and the Mishnah is looking at the following halachic phenomena. And that is that if I have oil floating on top of wine, I'll read the Mishnah first. Shemen shetzafa gabi yayin v'nagot tful yom b'shemen l'apasol ala shemen v'ovad. Rav Yochanan Nori amar shneim chiburim ze leze. The case over there in the Mishnah tful yom is where I have oil floating on top of wine, meaning based on the density of the properties of oil, so oil is going to float on top of wine. And let's say the oil is truma and the wine is truma as well. And now I have a tful yom. Now a tful yom, generally speaking, is regarded as a shein l'tumah. Tful yom, somebody who toveled in the mikvah but still waiting for hair of shemesh, so has a residual tumah with him. If this tful yom now were to touch regular chulin food, the chulin food becomes totally unaffected, because chulin can only become a sheni and no more than a sheni. If a tful yom is a shein l'tumah, which he is, so then his touching of chulin will not affect the chulin at all. On the other hand, if he touches truma, so the truma now becomes a shlishi, otherwise known as being posel, the truma. It will disqualify the truma. So now the question over here, the Mishnah Tful Yom is dealing with, is that when the oil is floating on top of the wine, and our Tful Yom touched the oil which is on the top, is that going to be affecting the wine that's below it? Machlokes HaTanayim. Machlokes between Reb Yochanan ben Nuri and the Chachamim. Chachamim are of the position that the only thing that becomes pasul is the oil, and there is not only a physical, but a halachic separation between the oil and the wine. Rav Yochanan Nuri says that despite the fact that physically they're separated, nevertheless, halachically, it's viewed as one entity. So now the Gemara says, perfect. That is what's going on over here, meaning the machlokus in our Mishnah between the Chachamim and Rabbi Shimon is exactly this machlokus. Rabbanan ki Rabbanan. The rabbis of our Mishnah are following the Chachamim of that Mishnah Tful Yom, viewing them as two separate entities, physically and halachically disconnected. And meanwhile, Rav Yochanan ben Nuri, the Rabbi Shimon, Rav Yochanan ben Nuri, and Rabbi Shimon's in agreement with the position of Rav Yochanan ben Nuri, that they are considered one entity, and as one entity, so even though physically separated, but halachically one entity, so since it's one entity, so therefore it can create unification, and therefore this partnership would in fact substitute for the need of an eruv. In other words, it basically becomes the de facto eruv. Okay, I'm thinking this is a good place to stop. It's not a great place to stop in terms of the daf. However, it is a good place to stop in terms of just next topic is going to really take us some time to explain. And so, just out of consideration of time, so we're gonna pause over here and we'll pick it up tomorrow. Okay, let's quickly recap now our doc. The first topic that we covered this morning was a continuation of yesterday's question, that in the event that the father dies on Shabbos, father did not contribute to the Eruv, and now the son inherits the property on Shabbos, can the son now do Bittul, can he relinquish his rights to the Chatzar, allowing everybody else to carry within the Chatzar? Rav Nachman's answer was yes, and the Gemara spent a good amount of time, all of Amud Beis of yesterday's daf, and a little bit of the Amud Aleph of today's daf, discussing this case. We quoted a number of brisos, each one of them seemingly go against this principle of Rav Nachman, that the son can, in fact, do bittul on Shabbos, but the Gemara ends up defending Rav Nachman. And there were a couple of defenses of Rav Nachman, either one defense is that in both prices that it says that it creates restriction up until the point of bittul, but once you get to the point of bittul, so then the issue would be resolved. Or the other defense would be that Rav Yochanan's defense, in that the prices that we quoted that seem to go against Rav Nachman, the authors of those prices are Beis Shammai. Beis Shammai disallows bittul to be done on Shabbos itself. According to Beis Shammai, bittul can only be done before Shabbos. Then, next topic that we covered is Beis Hillel says that bittul can be done on Shabbos itself. What is the machlokes between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel? So Ula gave a suggestion. The Gemara did not like it. And Abaye's explanation, which the Gemara seems to prefer, is that how to look at bittul. Is bittul a formal transaction? Your removal of yourself from the chatzar, is that a formal transaction which would be prohibited on Shabbos based on the Isra of Mekach HaMemkar? And we gave two reasons why Mekach HaMemkar is Asar on Shabbos, or maybe no. Maybe it's not formal, but rather it's informal, meaning that the entire institution of Erevin is a Din D'Rabbanan, and the Chachamim's demand that you have to remove yourself is not a formal transaction, but rather more of an informal transaction. You're just simply excusing yourself from the property so that everyone else can now carry from the homes into the shared chatzer. And so this is informal. It does not violate the Isra Mekor Chomemkar. That is the Gemara's explanation of the Machlokes between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel. And needless to say, we felt like Beis Hillel in that Bittul can be done on Shabbos itself. Then we started a Mishnah, and the Mishnah talks about a situation where there is a business partnership between the various members of the Chatzer, and if the business partnership is over the same commodity, that is going to create unification, obviating the need for an Eruv. The Mishnah made a distinction in terms of where the various business partnerships are created over the same commodity, which creates unification, versus if the partnerships are created over different commodities where it does not create unification. Rabbi Shimon in the Mishnah says that even if the partnerships are created over different commodities, that could still create unification. What we are in the middle of trying to explain is, what is this position of Rabbi Shimon? How can partnerships between various people that is not made over the same commodity, how can that create unification? So what we have now done this morning is given so far two explanations of Rabbi Shimon. One is that Rabbi Shimon is Rabbah's explanation. Rabbi Shimon is being consistent to a position that he laid out earlier in the Masechta, where I have three chatzeros, and the central chatzer made two separate eruvs with the two exterior chatzeros. So that is what we're describing over here. I have a chatzer that's being flanked by two separate mavuis. And since it's being flanked by two separate mavuis, what the Mishnah over here is describing is that our central chatzer now made one sheet of mavos with one mavui, using one commodity, and a second sheet of mavo with the other members of the other mavui with a second commodity. That's one way to explain Rabbi Shimon. That's Rabbi's explanation. It's extraordinarily creative, and it has Rabbi Shimon going l'shita self. The Gemara on the top of the Amud Beis brought in the Rav Yosef's explanation, which is that no, really, it's oil and wine, and the unification is being created with one mavui. And over here, what's at issue is, how do you view oil and wine that are together? Are they considered two separate entities, or it's considered one entity? A machlokus in the Mishnah Tvul Yom, and the Mishnah then carries over that machlokus to our discussion over here. That will be the machlokus between the Chacham and Rabbi Shimon of our Mishnah. Ad Kan.